Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Now, let's get started. This time, we're going to be talking about educational credentials. Now, I'm often asked about what kind of educational requirements are there for leadership, and what kind of credentials should we look for when we're trying to choose an expert, when we're trying to hire somebody, trying to find somebody to give us an expert opinion. And the answer is, well, let's talk about it. So what do we think? What kind of educational requirements should a leader have? And what kind of credentials should an expert have in order to be taken on board as an expert and have their expert opinion? Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. We've got kind of consensus here. And it's kind of funny because a lot of you tell me that I say it depends a lot. Right? And I do, because it depends on the circumstances. So a whole bunch of people, thank you all for being here, for all of your participation. A lot of folks are saying it depends. And it does. It depends. Yeah. So we're going to make that our first topic. Because sometimes actual formal educational credentials are either not really needed with this specific person, this leader or this expert, or there are no formal educational credentials. It depends what kind of issues you've got, right? It depends what you need. It depends on what's going on. I suppose that's true. People are saying it depends on who's asking. Maybe it does. Yeah. A lot of people are talking about the fact that credentials do add to stature, do add to the confidence level of the participants, right? This is a true statement, too. We'll talk about this after that, the need for formal credentials before you can enter and therefore you have experience in many areas, right? Sometimes formal credentials are an actual requirement set up by, well, by whoever it is that's convening this group, right? And we as leaders sometimes require that an expert has formal credentials so that when we say, well, we're hiring this person, and then we list all their accolades and attributes and credentials and like that to the higher-up who's actually paying, right?
Right.
So sometimes you need formal credentials. Ah, good point. Sometimes credentials are needed for funding. You have to show who's in charge and who's going to be connected with the group, with the issues. I think our last topic is going to be reputation. People are talking about reputation being more important than formal credentials. Let's talk about how you get that kind of a reputation and what you should do if somehow you've had kind of an incident where your reputation was not as stellar as it might be. Although we, of course, would never do such a foolish thing because the reputation is extremely important. So let's talk about the first topic that we're going to call it depends. And it does. It depends. What kind of credentials you as leader needs really does depend, and what kind of credentials an expert needs really does depend on the topics, right? As Alex says, it depends on the type of expertise required. Yes, it might be something very technical. You might need an inventor, whoever invented whatever it is you're talking about or is in that field, to come in and talk to you. Sometimes these people don't really have formal educations. Yes. I see that a lot with computers nowadays, with software and things. People are extremely smart and they know how to put together something really interesting and complicated, and we're having some sort of a dispute or issues or whatever, and they don't really have fancy formal credentials. They're like entrepreneurs. They're in the business. They're in the tech world, right? Yeah. And they've kind of advanced along a certain narrow path that you need to have someone give you expertise in. And they didn't really go to formal education, which is a more general path, right? Yeah. But they're really buffo and they're really tops in their field. And if you're very lucky, they can explain it to you. I actually have a tech expert who's fabulous and quite young, and he's not really doing the formal education thing because there's no need for him to do so. He's an innovator in the programming field, and he understands all kinds of things, and lo and behold, he can even manage to explain it to us. This is all good. Sahima says that unusual experience rises above credentials. Yeah, that's really a truth. Unusual experience rises above credentials. Like my tech guy, there's lots of folk that really know something. We've actually, over the years, I've had different kinds of experts, different kinds of leaders from different groups that we have co-joined, that we have worked with, that we have asked them to partner with us. And sometimes we've actually had all kinds of scientific-type people and agricultural-type people and like that. And their unusual experience is way above credentials, as Sahima says. I mean, you can look in a book and you can study stuff, but there's people out there who may have 25 years of actual hands-on experience. Hey, I'd rather have them. I'd rather know how it really works. What the day-to-day is, what the issues really are. If we do this, how will it impact that, right? Yes, because when you're calling in an expert, it means that no one in your group really has sufficient expertise in the real world, and we want to know what's really going to be a benefit and what the repercussions will be because we're not in that world and we're not sure. And that's when I do like to call in an expert. I can look around my group and we're all well-meaning, fabulous people. The participants are lovely and they'd like to make the world a better place and 43 other nice things. And even corporations, they'd like to make money and they'd like to have a wonderful product that's really useful and everybody goes, wow, I got to get 4 of those. That's fabulous. Whoever thought of such a thing must be a genius. Yes, but none of us in the room really know the real-world application. Yeah, I'm afraid that's true. People are asking me if that means that I don't generally hire, like, professors and things to be experts. And I don't necessarily – they can be participants, but I'm kind of leery of them if they've never actually been in the field. Now, sometimes people are retired or whatever, and they become professors, and they become teachers, and they become theorists and like that. But they have really, they do really understand the real world and what's going on out there. That's different. But I am afraid that I'm afraid this is a bias. It's a preconceived notion, isn't it? That if somebody's just book learned something, I know it's not really books anymore, it's computer, but they've just studied something, but they've never gone and looked at it, they've never really been there, they've never talked to the people who are really dealing with the issues. I'd rather have someone who's really on the ground, really dealing with the issues, yeah. And sometimes we have people in a group who, I don't like to say they're like honorary, but because I really want to know what's going on and we want to hear the repercussions in the real world, but people in the real world might not have impressive credentials on paper, sometimes we also have experts and participants and even team leaders who are who have fancy credentials on paper. But I do like to balance that with somebody who really knows what they're doing. Oops, did I say that? My goodness, that's a preconceived notion of mine, isn't it? It might even be a bias. But it if that's true, and it is a bias, it is one that has been formed over many years of experience. And I know that sometimes people talk pretty, and they're in the field, but they're in the education portion, and they've never really done it exactly. Or maybe just as an intern or something when they were young. Ah, gee, let's have some other folk too. Even though they have fancy paper credentials and we'd like them to be on our side because they look fabulous and they are well-spoken. They can be the media spokesperson. We're going to be talking about the media in a little while. And like that, I mean, they're fabulous. And they stand up there and they look wonderful and they sound wonderful and everybody goes, ooh, this person really knows what they're doing. But I'd like to hear from somebody with less fancy credentials and more real life experience also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of agree with Sahima that unusual experience rises above credentials, but it's still kind of good. And, you know, we as leaders oftentimes have nice credentials too, which is kind of cool. I mean, I have 2 law degrees, one of them a regular law degree and one of them an extra doctorate in business. And that looks nice, all those little letters after you, right? Right. Yeah, as Carol says, credentials are an entry point, and then you need reputation and experience. Yes. Now, if you can get that all in one person, leader, expert, well, we're the leader, and we probably have enough credentials, and we definitely have leadership and reputation and experience, right? And we're going to talk about how to get those if that's not true of you. And maybe you have the credentials, but you're new and you need to get some experience and a reputation in the community too. The credentials are an entry point. And if you're being hired by a company, by an organization, and it goes especially like to a committee, they do like to see the credentials. What I will tell you is if you are the leader and you don't have a college degree, for example, I think it would behoove you to get one and to maybe take take some mediation courses. And also, I think a degree in psychology would be a nice point of reference, right, if you're going to get a college degree, and you are. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's not so hard to do, even if you're really busy. Because you can do it online and like that. But a college degree, it's really kind of a leadership necessity unless your reputation and experience are so great that no one cares. And after a while, actually, no one will care. No one will ask you where you went to school. It's just not something they care about, right? Because you're so fabulous that it makes no difference where you actually went to school 1,000 years ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that goes, as Hernan says, that goes to your leadership skills, right? If your leadership skills are fabulous, well, maybe you don't need paper credentials, right? You're doing just fine. You've got all kinds of people needing your help, right? Yeah, because your paper skills, your leadership skills are just buffo. And some of you are like that, and I think it's fabulous. Some countries, it's a little more traditional to have formal credentials than others. And, of course, this is a global show, so I happen to be in the United States, where it is somewhat traditional to have paper, to have a degree in something. But it is certainly not a requirement of any sort. And even if it's a requirement on paper for employment, being really well-known and having excellent reputation experience will trump that. Somebody will say, well, this is the person anyhow. I don't care what kind of piece of paper they've got, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And that goes to your leadership skills. Mm-hmm. Thomas and others are saying that it is a nice extra if you can get some credentials, right? Some actual credentials. This is true of experts too. Now, you may not be the person who's actually paying the expert. In fact, you're probably not as leader. You've got somebody who you have to say, "This, I want to call in this person as an expert." And then you have to tell someone about them. Well, yeah, it's nice to have the credential, but it's not crucial, right? Yeah. So the answer is, what type of leadership and expert credentials are required? I think none are required if you have reputation experience instead. Yeah. But a little bit of window dressing never hurt anything, right? Yeah. So sometimes you need to have an extra expert who comes in because they are fancy, but they don't know as much. Yeah, sometimes that happens. I see that a lot. That's why I have that bias, really. The next topic we're going to be talking about, that the credentials add stature and how much, right? You know, this is a good point, too. Although you have to talk kind of slow to employers, I think. Thomas and others are saying that your credentials can actually be reputation and experience, right? Yeah, that is your credential. And we're acting like if you only have reputation and experience, you don't have any credentials, because only the credentials that count are the piece of paper. But that's not really true, right? Yeah, credentials can actually be your reputation and experience. Yeah, can actually be, look, this is what I know. This is where I've been. I am the leader of this group, right? Yeah. And the more specialized the area, the more reputation and experience counts. I've seen this in the oil drilling industry. Yes, there are people who know specific things about oil drilling and how to stop a rupture, how to stop a leak, and like that, and how to really make the equipment work properly, who are been in the business a while, and they're really fabulous. And if you wrote down on paper what kind of actual physical piece of paper credential they've got, my guess is none. But their reputation and experience are their credentials. Yeah, and so it's fabulous. Yes. A good point, too. Sharon and others are saying sometimes people from Ivy League schools, we call them Ivy League, it's kind of an Americanism. It's schools that have a fancy reputation. And all of you belong to different countries because this is a global show, but you've all got some schools in your country that are considered to be very top-notch, right? Schools of higher education. Universities, I'm going to call them, although they're not all called universities, but you understand the level, right? And everybody's country has some that are considered to be really, really top-notch. In the United States, something from Harvard or Yale or something like that would be really, we call that Ivy League. They're kind of a step above in reputation. Very elitist. Usually very expensive, although in some countries, of course, all education is paid for. But you understand that it's very not very big, not very many people, very selective, we'll call it, right? Yeah. And those kinds of schools, and it's a really good point that Sharon and others are making, are not only impressive on paper. For example, for an expert to be called in addition to the person that has some actual expertise, not instead of. And these people that you call in as experts and might be leaders also, and might become team leaders, or you might want them to in some way take a leadership position. These people also have connections, right? Yeah, because they've been hobnobbing in kind of the higher echelon. You know, there's nothing to be sneezed at. It's very important to have some connections, and that's really what an expert does also, not just give their opinion, but actually help, actually get hired on to make the right phone calls, to make the connections that need to be made so that we can go forward successfully and that we understand that we have some backing, right? And we're going to get to funding in a little while, And they are fabulous on funding because they know everybody. Yeah. So the credentials could be the connections also, and not even the day-to-day information. We can get that. But the connections that come with having an expert or a leader who is, well, well-connected. And this is true in every country. It might be government connections, might be schooling connections, might be all kinds of connections. And, yes, that does indeed come in handy when you want funding, doesn't it? And you want to have stature in the community. So there's nothing wrong with having fancy credentials. And quite frankly, on an expert, because you can hire more than one expert, right, at least one and possibly the new spokesperson will be someone with really fancy paper credentials. Yeah. Oh, I suppose that is true. People are saying that people who have come from fancy schools kind of coast through life because their credentials are so desirable that people just let them not know very much and just come. My personal experience, which is all that you can really know in this world, is not that. That my personal experience is people with very fancy paper credentials. I don't know how to say this nicer. They come with a certain amount of, yeah, I am going to call it arrogance oftentimes. And they need to be gently and carefully brought into the fold, right? So that they don't in some way get a different notion than what was expected, right? Yeah. Now, sometimes somebody has an opinion that we haven't thought of, and that is of value. But sometimes, yeah, they've gone through life kind of on their fancy credentials, and they want you to think they're completely right no matter what. Even if the person who has the reputation and experience in the field has a different idea. Does that make sense? Yeah. It kind of is superiority, right? It's been my experience that they don't exactly coast. Because coasting implies that they just go along and they look nice in the room. Like trophy brides. Excuse me, I took a sip of water. My experience has been that they are quite opinionated and they need to be treated with deference and then brought and then made to understand the real life implications. Yeah. That's been my experience. So I guess I don't use very many of them, and I use just a few, and that's how they act. Okay. Kaleri says that also military experience and camaraderie. Uh-huh. Now, it depends, of course, what the topics are. But military experience is a very good thing, and they, too, have different kinds of connections than possibly you and I do, right? Yeah, that's the key to it. We don't really have connections like that, and they do, which is fabulous. And they might pull out, some help, some information, a different viewpoint. I tend to welcome people who have all kinds of different viewpoints and come from different areas. When we have complex topics, it's going to affect a lot of people. Because I want to know what the downside is. I want to know what the real life effect is going to be if we do this, right? And that's terribly important. It's terribly important to know how this is going to impact people and whether or not it's going to impact them positively and they're going to be pleased is the main thing, right? Yeah, and that's why you have someone with expertise in the specific area, maybe even in addition to people with fancy credentials. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the next topic we're going to talk about is actually our fancy credentials and formal credentials. Ada says that you need them to be considered by a committee and an employer. boy, it sure helps. I do, I guess because I have a lot of schooling, I do think that schooling is important because not so much the topics, but it teaches you how to deal with all kinds of people too. Because you have to. You have to deal with all kinds of people who are also competing for grade, all kinds of administrators, all kinds of... It gives you an insight into how to deal with people in addition to an education in your chosen field. Yet people are asking me what you would recommend to be a like a college major. I would say something that has to do with people, because that's essentially what you're going to be doing if you're going to be a leader like this. I would say psychology. Boom, it's a little esoteric. There are all kinds of specialty degrees now that didn't exist when I was a girl and going to college. And the specialty degrees might even be closer. There might even be a mediation degree, a mediation certificate of some sort that you can get, right? Yeah, a negotiation, a consensus building, that kind of stuff. And that would be very valuable, but still, you need reputation and experience, and we're getting there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, this is a good point. George says it's impressive to the media when the leader and the expert are formally credentialed because they like to put it down, right? They like to say who you are and what you are and like that. Mm-hmm. Yes, they like to – the media is attracted like little shiny things. The media is attracted to interesting information, right? Yeah. And it's interesting what kind of groups you're in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's – sometimes you do need to have a formal education to be considered for the group. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Aaron says that when you feel very confident and you've got nice formal credentials and like that, which you can get, it's not hard to do, that it gives you an air of authority and respect. An air of authority and respect. Let's think about that. You're my leader. I want you to know more than I do, and I want you to be able to make this motley group of people with all different kinds of personal agendas into one team that works together for the big picture, right? That's what I want. Mm-hmm. And if you have an air of authority and respect, and you really do have some formal credentials, you can tell people that's how it's going to be. We're going to really get this done, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. An air of authority and respect. Mm-hmm. People are talking, Hussein and others are talking about foreign credentials. Yeah, Hussein said that he has some difficulty with that. The answer is that you should indeed be capable of employment and like as a leader, and that your experts should have credentials also. Now, foreign, I might ask for an explanation. I might ask for translation of it, right? I might ask where it's from, especially if I am taking on an expert who I am basically unfamiliar with, and they present with foreign credentials, foreign to me, different language. I'm not certain what I'm looking at, right? If I'm not certain and the credential is important, the piece of paper, and quite frankly, if somebody's lying to you about their credentials, that's interesting to know too now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Excuse me, took another sip of water. I need the credentials translated not by the person presenting them, but by somebody else, right, who doesn't have an interest in making them come out fancy. Mm-hmm. And then I'd like that someone else to maybe check the reference, right? make a phone call and speak with the in the language in which the reference is to the institution or whatever, the school. Yeah, I'd like to have it checked third party, not just take somebody's word for it. You'd be surprised. Yeah, I'd like to know what kind of a credential that is. And if it's real, that's the other thing I'd like to know. Our next topic is going to be funding, getting money, right? Yeah, that Lee and others are saying funding looks for the leader's credentials. Manuela says that they are strict and unimaginative. Probably right. Yes, strict and unimaginative. It means that somebody needs to check off boxes and your educational level does not fit well in the little boxes. Well, if you could reach a human being, for example, you could serve as a person in a position of authority and power. They would know about your reputation and experience, right? Because your reputation is something they should know about. It's something that you bring to the table, right? Right. This is a good point, too. Manuela says that when you have funding, not only do they look to leadership credentials, they also look somewhat to expert credentials if you're relying on them for your opinions. And we have to know what it is, the minimal requirement, right? And we have to understand that sometimes the people who are the initial point of contact, for example, we want to be employed somewhere, they look down a list that they've been given and they check off whether or not you go to the next step, right? And as Manuela and others are saying, sometimes they're strict and unimaginative. And Barbara says sometimes they have an approval template, things they have to check off, right? Which is why it's really kind of important to get a college degree in a people-oriented field. Certainly. People are asking if it has to be people-oriented and whether or not they can get a college degree in tech or something like that. Absolutely. Especially if that's where your area of expertise lies. Yeah, you don't have to go through all the English lit classes, if you know what I mean. Yeah, that they're unimaginative. The funding issue sometimes can't be overridden. You need to raise so much money in order for us to match it. If you've got requirements for that and there's an approval template of what you check off for what people have in the leadership role, I'm not certain that that's such a good thing, right? Yeah. And as Suki says, credentialed experts enhance the application. You might not be able to get past square one if you don't show them that you are a leader of some reputation and experience, and you're fabulous, and they want you, right? Right. Yeah. Let's go on to the next one, because people are asking about it during this show, and I want to be sure and have enough time, because I did promise to leave time for the recipes. I don't always do so. I'll answer the foreign credentials one first. Quite a few people are asking how you get the foreign credentials, how you know what they say. And the answer is you hire an outside interpreter. Now, sometimes, in some places, in this area, for example, there is quite a bit of court work, and there are people who are interpreters, right? That's what they do for business. They also do other office-y type things, but they actually come in pretty much any kind of language you can get. In wherever you are, that might not be possible. I would say my first stop would be a university to see students who are studying languages, maybe a professor studying languages. This is fine because you don't need experience and reputation. You want a straightforward thing. You want to know what that says. Mm-hmm. And you can't Google it. That's a good point, because it's not in written language that you're familiar with, for example. Right? Right. Besides, I kind of like people to, if I have to check up on this because I'm feeling kind of shaky about whether or not this person is a sufficient expert, if I have to do that, then quite frankly, I want to also check to make sure that the papers are real. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really do, because we do not have a level of trust if that's what I need to do. Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's talk. So yeah, so the credentials have to be real. And if they're actually credentials, they need to be shown to you and maybe even to an expert on that kind of credential. So I know what I've got, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I must confess that my teams, generally speaking, fill up quickly, and a lot of people would like to get in, even for the workshops and seminars. And I do insist on identification. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is good, too. Quite a few people are asking how to regain a good reputation after the leader has experienced has had bad experience, right? How to create the reputation. Now, you might have a pretty good reputation, but this particular instance, you got kind of stopped. You got kind of in trouble, right? No, 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 no. Let's look to what we're going to do first. The first thing we're going to do, and Lane and others are already biting their nails to find out if they're in. The first good reputation experience is, I don't want people reporting during the process. It always comes out wrong. And they actually don't mean it. They have texted or blogged or whatever kind of on the fly and without looking at it again, and thinking about, if I were reading this for the first time as a stranger, what would this say to me? Yeah, and the answer is, well, let's think about it carefully. Let's work on it. Because quite frankly, it is very necessary to have a good reputation and to keep it. And one of the things you shouldn't let people do is to report during the process. We're not done. We haven't gotten there yet. Hang on. We're heading to it, right? And don't report it to the world as though this is what's going to be the outcome. Because even I don't know the outcome. We're dealing with people, and people are fun, right? So you need media control. We want to have no reporting during the process. I really do. I'm very strict about that. And I say these things up front because it's part of transparency, right? You have to tell people if they're not allowed to blog during the process, because they do it kind of naturally. They sit there with their thumbs and their fingers and everything and hit send without ever reading it. Yeah. And then they go, I'm sorry. No, we won't be doing it in the first place. I announced that very carefully. And we might need a spokesperson for media, right? Yes. And a spokesperson for media should be somebody selected by the group to always be the media point, the person who does the reporting, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, no reporting during the process. Eleanor and others are talking about volunteering in the community. Right? When you're all finished, even if you've got leftovers and stuff, have the community come in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to invite the community in. Right? One of the ways to create a good reputation and gain some experience is to volunteer. and really, really learn something. Volunteer in your field. Really get to know the other people. Really get to know the community leaders. It's worth your time. It really is. Around here, some of the very good volunteer positions, really where you get really help and information and like that, they are fabulous because nonprofits and other small companies, I think, too, but I know from the nonprofit field, that big organizations, and you should find this out in your area because it may be true everywhere, especially if you've got these multinational organizations in your country, big multinational organizations actually create a good reputation by being helpful in the community. Oh, Starbucks I'm going to use as an example because they're particularly community-oriented. They actually participate in just about every kind of charitable group that's basically non-disputed. You know, everybody wants children to have better lives and things like that. So they give donations. They donate their product with their logo on it, right, to just about every kind of group. Mm-hmm, yeah. They volunteer in the community. They actually give, not the baristas so much, I think maybe they can also, but the really impressive part is that they will pay, full pay, and a management-level employee, and then through a program that they participate in, that employee doesn't show up to work at Starbucks for his or her salary. They volunteer to help a new business or a struggling business or something that is really good for the community. They volunteer to help. While they're being paid, they volunteer full time. While they're being paid by Starbucks for a certain time period, like a year. Yeah, and it's fabulous. Because that's a fabulous way to create a reputation. If you belong, if you work someplace that has that, go sign up. Because it will really enhance your reputation in the community and you will gain experience. Right? Yes. Charles and others are talking about publishing as increasing your reputation in the community. Yes, probably. Assuming that you've published carefully and not been insulting to anyone, right? Yeah. I oftentimes volunteer on some sort of a group that I have some interest in but no expertise. It's a new community to me. I'd like to learn something. I'd like to know something. I'd like someone to show me how, right? And in return, I will use my considerable expertise in business and help them too. So, yes, so you volunteer in the community is a fabulous way. It's also a way to redeem yourself if you have accidentally had a reputation difficulty, we'll call it, right? Right. And then people will know, because they know you, that it was just an aberration. It was a misunderstanding. And usually those are. There's some sort of misunderstanding that has gotten blown out of proportion probably in the media, which is why it's a good idea to have some friends and some reputation. And to I like to reach the media straightforward if I've got a contentious group, right? I like to do the media announcements, and I like to do them very straightforwardly so that everyone knows that they've had their information for the day. Charles and others are talking about publishing. I think that's true. If you publish something and it's really well written, it will enhance your reputation as an expert and a leader. Recipe for Peace now has two books, right? One of them a reference book and one of them a workbook. And it does indeed enhance our, oh, I'm going to call it marketability, that we have the capacity to do two different types of seminars, two different types of things, right? Yeah, and if you can do that, that's fabulous. Yes, Bobby says always act with integrity. Wow, that's important. You need to always act with integrity and not go, well, this is good enough. It's not. And Mohammed and others are talking about the civility rules. Very important. You must be a model of the civility rules. I don't care what's happened. Somebody has goaded you into an inopportune moment, right? Somebody wants to see if they can get you to, I don't know, hit somebody on camera because you've lost your temper. No, 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 no. As Muhammad and others say, we are models of the civility rules at all times. And the civility rules at their base say we will not be rude to one another and we will not lose our temper no matter what. Right? Yeah. We will not be rude to one another and we will not lose our temper no matter what. Mm-hmm. And sometimes no matter what comes. So you have to be prepared and you have to know that A, everybody's filming you nowadays, and B, that the civility rules are always in effect. Yes. And we also try to make a convivial atmosphere and we try to bring in as many people to join us, to participate, even to watch as we can and as appropriate, because it's very important to really, really be able to say, look, I'm the leader. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to be inclusive and transparent. True of experts, too. I like to have more than one expert because they have different opinions. And then I like the experts to tell me why they have the different opinions. Yeah, what's the base? What is the difference between you? And how come you looked at the exact same information that got something so different? Always very interesting. Yes, because how are you going to know if you don't ask? And also reputation and experience has to do with making a convivial atmosphere, right? So that we can all find out what it is that we need to get to our consensus and successful outcome. In order to do that, Recipe for Peace Now, almost always, in fact, I think it's always, has some food in the room. Now, it might be dinner time, which means you should have more food in the room, but the food is really not the issue. It is a tool to get us away from the table, away from what is contentious, and talk to each other. Yes, so the food is a tool, really. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have food, and you are, I think you should have a safe recipe. Usually I bring the safe recipe, just to be safe. And the safe recipe is, doesn't have too many ingredients. Oh, you're right. Thank you. People are saying you didn't say about the survey and the list. Thank you. Thank you for keeping track of me. If you're going to have food, this is the part that I forgot to say, if you're going to have food in the room, and you are, you need to take a survey and find out if anybody has a food prohibition, a food allergy, something they just won't eat, right? And you need to disseminate that information. And when people come with food, because it's basically a potluck, ask them to bring a list of what is in it. Not what to call meatloaf, but what is in it, so I can run my eye down the list and see if I can eat it. Right? Right. Now, this is my safe recipe, but it might not be your safe recipe because we live in different parts of the world. But these items would be common, and my participants would have eaten them before and know if they can. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. And there's no real surprises, but we're going to have a list anyway. So it's chicken salad. Always a nice treat, right? Maybe even with some crackers on the side or some bread and like that and some condiments, right? Because some people like it very hot. Some people don't. I cook very bland, and then I figure you can add in. So let's start. Let's have about 3 cups of cooked, chopped chicken or turkey. Make little cubes out of them. Now, I hate to say this, because there's a storage issue and like that, and you have to be careful. This not only has mayonnaise, but it has cooked chicken that might be left over from yesterday, right? Don't save things too long because you'll make people sick. But this is a fabulous recipe for leftovers, right? Yeah. Oh, people ask if you can use ham. Yes, but if you use ham, that's pork, and I consider that to be more of an adventure recipe, and you have to be sure that everybody has answered the survey, right? Right. Yeah. You can use whatever protein you like. Let's think about meat. I think meat should be a little more ketchup-based, but that's just me. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's fabulous for leftover cooked, right, turkey and chicken. So we got three cups of that. And we've got a half cup of mayonnaise. Oh, you can make mayonnaise if you want, but I'm certainly not going to. Let's have about a quarter of a cup of finely chopped celery, right? 2 tablespoons of pine nuts that we're going to toast up. Make sure nobody's allergic. Yeah, you can't find pine nuts. Use some sort of a nice soft nut. You can use peanuts, but make double sure nobody's allergic because peanuts are tricky. Make sure you put them on the list. Mm-hmm. And peanuts do not have to be toasted, of course. Yeah, I've used peanuts in my day. I actually like to keep the peanuts whole so that you can see them. Just because a peanut allergy is a terrible thing. Mm-hmm. Let's have 1 tablespoon of snipped fresh parsley. And I'm going to use 1 tablespoon of drained and finely chopped oil-packed dried tomatoes. Just for texture and for taste and like that. It's not real sweet, this one. If you can't find such a thing, and they are a little rare, use chopped olives, which are also extremely nice. Maybe even nicer. Drain them real good, pat them dry, and make sure you don't have any pit pieces, right? And because I like chicken salad to be kind of sweet as well as the salty, right? Because you've got the nuts and the olives or the dried tomatoes, right? I like a half cup of raisins, maybe a little less. Yeah, I just think it adds nice texture and taste to it. So, we're going to take, really the mayonnaise is our dressing. We might need more than half a cup. Let's take a look at it when it's all done and see if it's all covered in the mayonnaise. And if not, throw some more mayonnaise in it, for heaven's sakes. Mm-hmm. We're going to combine the chicken, the celery, the parsley, the nuts of whatever kind you're using, the raisins, the tomatoes, the olives, the whole thing that we just said. We're going to mix them all around in a big, nice big bowl. Then we're going to add the mayonnaise. Yay, team. This is a really simple dish. Mm-hmm. Mix all the ingredients first because once you get the mayonnaise, it gets kind of thicker, right? And you put in as much mayonnaise as you think you need, as you think it looks nice. Yes. Yeah, people are asking about all kinds of different condiments, so to speak, to put in there. Yeah, whatever it suits to your taste. Yeah, people are asking about paprika and Dijon mustards and like that. Yeah, whatever it is, whatever it is, I don't like to make it very spicy. We've got some votes for things like jalapenos and stuff. I think that you should serve it kind of bland and put stuff like that on the side. So that if people love jalapenos, they can take a big slice with every bite. But people that can't stand spicy like that aren't precluded from eating the delicious chicken salad. Yeah, it's why I don't oversalt or anything either. I truly think that condiments like that, that make it spicy or salty, should go on the side. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then you can choose what you want. So we've got all the ingredients mixed around, and the strong stuff on the side. Put mayonnaise on it. Mix it again, right? And then let's chill it in the refrigerator for a couple of hours so it's nice and cold, right? Which makes it very appealing and very delicious. Mm-hmm. Easy to do. Easy to take with as long as you don't let it get too hot and you've got a refrigerator if it's going to sit around for a while. Yeah, and delicious. Everybody likes it. Now, we've got about 3 minutes. Should I try to do the adventure recipe? It is pork stew, and it goes in the slow cooker. Let's do it. I think we can handle this. And then we'll start fresh next week. Yay! Mm-hmm. This is a slow cooker recipe. I really love slow cookers. You throw stuff in the morning, and by evening, when you've got your meeting, there's food, right? Yeah. Or you do it overnight or whatever. Slow cookers are fabulous. You should definitely get one. Okay, this is a nice pork one. I kind of like it with smoked pork hocks, but you don't have to. You can use regular pork pieces, regular pork chunks, right? The trick is I like to put the pork comes in like big pieces. Stick the big pieces in whole. We're using the slow cooker, and then we will shred them up because they're going to be lovely. Okay, we've got about 3-4 pounds of pork. Let's have 2 big cans of diced tomatoes, undrained. Put the juice in with it, like 16-ounce cans. Let's have a couple of medium, I like sweet onions, chopped. I know you're all going to be appalled, but let's put some ketchup in it because you can make ketchup, but quite frankly, you can buy ketchup, and it's easier. Let's have 1/2 cup of ketchup, 1/2 cup of cider vinegar. Ooh, so delicious for this thing. Let's have a couple tablespoons of packed brown sugar. Let's have 3 tablespoons of packed brown sugar that you kind of scatter around so that it's not all in a clump. 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce, not more because you don't want it to be too strong. I like a lot of garlic. You guys think I'm using too much garlic, use less. I'm going to say 4 cloves of garlic. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to have, it's about 1.5 cups, one of those frozen packages of lima beans, the little lima beans, and a frozen package of whole kernel corn, the yellow corn, right? Right. Mm-hmm. However that comes out to be, I think it's about 2 cups, maybe 1.5 cups. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we got our wonderful slow cooker. I like a little bigger one rather than a little smaller one, right? We're going to put the pork, the tomatoes with the juice, the onions, the ketchup, the vinegar, the brown sugar, the Worcestershire sauce, the garlic, all of it in there, right? And we're going to make sure that the pork is covered. Close down the lid. Low heat, 8 to 10 hours. High heat, 4 to 5. You see that low heat is like overnight. Fabulous. Take the pork out. It's going to be really hot, so be careful. Cut the meat off the bones if you've used meat, if you've used bones. Quite frankly, I like the kind that is more like pork tenderloin, so it's all meat, and we don't have weight and room taken up with the bones. We're going to run a knife through it, give it a nice coarse chop. Mm-hmm. We're going to put it back, right? Well, actually, we don't even have to put it back. Yeah, we should because it's hot. It's going to be hot. Remember our lima beans and our corn, and remember I didn't say them in the beginning? That's because we're going to throw them in the slow cooker now, which we did not turn off. We're going to turn it to a high heat setting if we use the low heat. Stir them in, because it's very hot in there. Cover and cook for another 1/2 hour. Now, you really don't have to put the meat back in. You can rewarm the meat in the sauce, so to speak, in the liquid. After you turn it off, you could just put it in to make it hot. But you want to heat through and make everything hot and make them incorporated, the lima beans and the corn. And, yes, you can add all kinds of nice things. I've added carrots in my day if there's room in my pot. In the United States, they have those crazy little baby carrots. Oh, they're fabulous. If not, you can chop up. Kind of chunk carrots because they're delicious and they go in the beginning, right? Because they're hard, or potatoes, or something like that. Yeah, the bigger the pot, the better the stew, in my opinion. And the bigger the pot, the more the meat, too. And you'll need a little more liquid. The trick to a slow cooker is that everything in there has to be covered with liquid. I'll throw in another can of tomatoes, in my opinion, and maybe a little extra of the ketchup and the vinegar and the brown sugar. Yeah. Just add to the wet ingredients. Yeah, because you don't want to open it later. You don't want to open it to peek in to add more stuff because that's not good while the meat is cooking. Yeah, you throw the frozen vegetables in at the last minute, 1/2 hour on high heat. Put the meat back in just to make everything hot. There you have it. and then you can bring it just like that. Fabulous. And if you have facilities in the room where you are meeting, it smells fantastic if you use a slow cooker in the room. Yeah. Yum, yum, yum. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.